Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Wu, should I call you Empress Wu?
Wu is great.
Yeah, yeah. I like how on your email it says M Wu, almost like M is your first name and Wu is your last name.
It's been really actually kind of difficult for me to figure out how to navigate that because I feel like other doms have really great names, you know, like, I don't know. Mistress Nico, you can, it's like very easily translates into, okay, you're going to call her Nico or you're going to call her Sybil or you're going to call her Shayla.
Yeah.
But Wu doesn't, it doesn't really register as a first name because it's not.
Oh, I see. Isn't it?
No.
Wu?
It's like the name of this old 7th century Chinese empress. And so.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. But in Chinese, like her name was Wu Zetian, which is, but the way that that works in Chinese is that like the last name comes first and then the first name comes second. So her, like Wu was not her first name. So it feels weird for me to be like, yeah, my name is Wu because it's, yeah.
It, well, what do you prefer, Empress?
Let's go with Wu.
Yeah.
This is all to say.
Well, it also, I mean, I like calling people by their last names.
Yeah.
And there's something very, there's also something masculine in Western culture about calling someone by their last name.
Yeah.
That's something that pissed me off in books when I was very young. In fact, I distinctly remember it was in the Michael Crichton novel, Jurassic Park. Have you heard of it? Yeah. Ever heard of it? Where like all of the men were referred to like by the omniscient narrator, by their last names, but Dr. Ellie Sattler was referred to as Ellie. Again, it's one thing if you like have characters and that's like how they would refer to each other, but it was the narrator, like the that was doing that.
That is weird.
And I was like, I'm nine, but I'm mad about things that are sexist.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, that's like a really, I feel like that would, I don't know how prominent that is in the novel, but I feel like that's such a covert way to, you know, like that's such a covert divide.
I mean, it's infantilizing.
Yeah, totally.
It's like the men are the humans.
Yeah.
And the people they are the adults who are who have agency. Yeah. And this woman is like a second class citizen.
She's different.
Yeah, she's different. Be that as it may, that is the culture that we live in. And so calling a mistress by her last name, my friend goes by Fletcher and it's like, definitely like her last name, her clients call her Fletcher and like we call her Fletch, and it's like there is something sort of mastery about that that I kind of like.
It's also funny because thinking about like the name or the way that names work, like if you're gonna call somebody like their honorific, it doesn't, I don't know, I guess it does go both ways.
Yeah, if you're like a kindergarten teacher then you say Miss Horn.
Yeah.
Miss Horn, the kindergarten teacher. Yeah. Put that in your spank bank. But
oh my fucking God.
Or you could say Miss Tina. I guess it would more be like, that's actually what I'm getting at is, sorry, I went straight to a fantasy place.
I got distracted.
Not sorry. But also I feel like probably a lot of your clients are fucking ignorant and don't realize that Wu is your last name, not your first name.
Yeah. And also is made up, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters, but it's also like, it's the rules are not real.
You get to decide.
I get to decide.
What the rules are.
Exactly.
Yeah. What so did you decide to use the honorific Empress because you named yourself after Empress Wu?
Yes, I did.
Cool.
Yeah, that was fun. She was like very cool, like a 7th century femme badass kind of like genderqueer icon.
Oh my god.
Yeah, very, very cool lady.
I want to know more about.
Fucking brutal. This bitch was brutal as shit. Like, she started out, I believe, as like, it's also been a minute since I've like read her Wikipedia page, so hold on for a second.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, but she started
out. But you've been channeling her, so yeah, you're an authority.
Yeah, so I'm like, yeah, I'm like reincarnated or whatever.
Yeah.
She started out as one of the reigning emperor's concubines.
Okay.
And then there's like a lot of like legend and lore about how she like fucked people over to get to be his favorite concubine.
Love it.
Yeah. Like there's this one controversial. There's this one story where she was like competing with like his favorite concubine and she killed her own son and like blamed it on her.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I'm like,
that'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was like, wow, that's like a really terrible thing for you to do. It feels like a little like that one story from the Bible, the King Solomon story.
Yeah.
Where they're like, let's cut the baby in half.
Yeah. If you will know who the true mother is because
yeah.
She's the one that would rather not have harm come to her
yeah.
son than have her son in yeah, her life. Yeah,
absolutely. It yeah. it feels vaguely related to that, but it's not.
But it's like I have plausible deniability.
Yeah,
about this.
Yeah, prove I murdered my baby.
As opposed to a man being yeah. like, let me decide everyone's fate.
Right. Let me prove this as like evidence of my relationship with God.
But I mean, but that's also like the Old Testament God is always like doing fucking yeah. like Abraham shit. Of
yeah,
like,
they really love like, doing that shit.
JK, JK.
Yeah, like, fuck it. Let's just see if you will. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, absolute power corrupts. Absolutely.
Absolutely. anyway.
So you named yourself after this brutal bitch.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
Another cool thing about her was that like, when her husband died, she was like, okay, well, I'm the ruler now. There are all these people who are like, you can't do that because you're a woman. She's like, well, then fuck you. I'm not a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, psych. That'll fix it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's another Empress Wu who lives in Los Angeles, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which is very funny. I'm like, great minds think alike.
I wonder what would happen if you two met.
Well, I'm planning on meeting her this coming week. She's like coming to New York and I'm like, wow, this is going to be really cool.
Yeah, you guys should definitely do some doubles. Maybe when you meet, the space-time continuum will collapse.
Yeah, nailed it. Yeah, I think that it might.
I can't wait.
I
We need that now more than ever.
I definitely agree. I'm like so excited to like meet her. Also, she's like a total badass.
There's a little like twincest like thing yeah. for me.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
Giving me that vibe.
I think that there was definitely the possibility for I was like nervous. I was like, oh, I hope I'm like not stepping on her toes, blah, 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 blah. She reached out to me. She's like, hi, we have the same name. And I'm like, yeah, we do. Do you ever wonder if like every single Mistress Vivian has this problem or like every single Veronica or,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like,
I do. Yeah.
Especially with those V names. No shade to anybody who has a Mistress V name. I'm a big fan of yours. Probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, V, you know. it's a femme letter.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. There's something that's like very like neo-noir about mm-hmm. that letter.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah.
Veronica.
Vagina.
Yes, also that's the thing. Vulva, correct, yeah. for sure. Yeah, vamp.
Yeah.
Vixen.
Absolutely. Venom.
Oh, yes, Venom.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you have no basis for comparison, but I wonder if just coming right out the gate being an empress as opposed to being a mistress mm-hmm. has made it so that your clients treat you with a certain reverence.
Mm. Yeah, I guess I don't really have like a point of reference. I'm also...
Do your clients treat you with reverence?
They do.
Good.
Yeah, which I feel like is like I'm pretty satisfied with the amount of reverence that I receive. Yeah, there is like a sense of they can go back and forth. Either is fine. I also think that Empress is like rising in popularity as like an honorific.
Cool. Definitely. It's a great honorific. I love it. And yeah. It suits you.
Yeah. Also, Empress Horn sounds great. Just saying.
Yeah, I haven't. Wow.
Yeah.
What does one have to do to qualify as an empress?
Self-identification, baby.
Great.
Yeah.
Maybe I need a little bit of that in the new decade.
Yeah. I also do feel like you have started an empire.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that you deserve it.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Empress in 2020. How long has it been since you've come into your empress mode?
Good question. I first took it on about 3.5 years ago.
Cool.
Yeah. I was in New York on a couple of internships, and I had heard about the idea of doming and like being a pro dom, and like some people that I knew had suggested it to me. And so
they were like, you seem, I'm getting like empress vibes from you.
Yeah. They were like, there was somebody that I dated who showed me like a documentary of like a financial dom.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, you know, you could do this. Which I love it when people say things like that. And like, I love saying that to other people. Like,
oh yeah.
Hey, by the way, if that doesn't work out for you, I got like a couple of connections your way. I came to New York, and then like I ran into a couple of people who had connections or had previously done that kind of work.
Yeah.
This kind of work. And it felt like the universe was trying to point me in a specific direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I, as a child of the internet, went on Craigslist.
Yes.
.com. and I typed in dungeon in like the talent gigs.
That, by the way, is also my origin story.
Fantastic.
Except it was in 2005.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Anyway, in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But I definitely was like, yeah, went to Craigslist and opened up the gigs section, and I think I typed in dominatrix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I started working for this like little boutique dungeon and Fidei, which was a very interesting experience. It was one of like three experiences that I had working where there was like a man behind the scenes.
Ah, yes.
Yes. We all know that whole situation. I've only worked for spaces that are run by men or worked for myself.
What? Yeah. How does that compare?
It is vastly better to just be working for myself, to not have to answer to anybody, and then also to not have to make money for another man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was three different situations, and all of them were like, there was one in the middle that was like, actually, all right. I worked in that situation for like 6 months in Austin after I first graduated from college. But both of the other ones were like nightmarish. They were so bad. And like the men, I don't know. You hear it all the time. The men were very entitled and disgusting and like...
I know. It's like, can they at least like have some imagination about the piece of shit that they're going to be?
Yeah. And it was gross. And like the first thing that happened when I arrived was he was like, oh, I can train you.
Oh, God.
And then he's like, I'm the only person in town who like will pay you to train. And I'm like, okay. And I was like a baby. I mean, legally. Like, so it was like, this feels like a good, yeah, you're probably right. You are like the only person in town who will pay me to train. But what I didn't know was that like training, like paying you to train means like, oh, I'm going to pay you to do like a mini session on me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's again, so predictable.
Yeah. And it also sucks because like, especially with the men who run these spaces that are subs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're like, I know what men like. I'm like, no, you idiot. You know what you like. And it's gross.
That's a read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That first guy, he was just like, put on these like 4-inch nails. This is what men like. And I was like, this doesn't feel like what? This feels gross. Like, yeah. Anyway, nightmare scenario.
Well, you got through it.
Yeah. It was a great learning experience.
And now you work for yourself.
Yes, I love working for myself.
And yeah, I mean, it will be nice if we can get to a point where the learning experiences that we can have come from...
Totally.
our own explorations, community where power is exchanged consensually and not coerced or manipulated, where people aren't predatory and like looking for people who are young and or like want to learn, which then puts them, you know, at not at the mercy of this predatory person, but it's sort of in a position where it's like, I mean, also, if you have been raised female, you're used to like making concessions and being like, well, I'm gonna have to deal with somebody's bullshit. Yeah. So this is the bullshit situation I'm choosing. Mm-hmm. And then meanwhile, somebody, some entitled person gets to enjoy your attention.
Yeah, you start making like negotiations with yourself, sure. which always feels weird. And like, yeah, I do think that there's like a lot of, I think that we've made like a lot of progress in like the way in which we're able to like, I don't know. I mean, I definitely like read your article, the one that you had in Good Faith, or maybe it was called Good Faith.
Oh yeah. It's called Good Faith, and it was published on Hazlitt.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah. And I read your article, and I read it a couple of times actually. And cool. I was like, damn, this is like, it's funny hearing like your experience in this one specific place. And then also like seeing the parallels between what you had and what I had, and like, yeah, it's just nice knowing you're not alone.
I'm real. That's what writing should do.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. No, I'm glad. That makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took me a long time to be ready to tell that story and to figure out the context that I wanted to tell it. And I kind of like, as a writer, I needed to create a sort of back door into telling that story by like exploring my obsession with cults and the ways that my obsession with cults is so personal.
Mm-hmm.
And then like framing this experience that I had as like an experience of someone attempting abusive indoctrination, as opposed to everything that I have learned about BDSM.
Right.
And queer leather and sex work. Yeah. I, you know, I've been actually fortunate to work with a lot of women. Not that women can't be abusive indoctrinators as managers or bosses or in interpersonal relationships or whatever. Right. It's amazing how long I was like scared to tell that story because I was worried that people would be mad at me.
Yeah. Or I think for me, the worry is like, I'm like nervous that people will think that I'm dumb, or I was dumb for having made that, having done that experience, or like.
Of course.
Yeah. But and it's also.
But that's built into the way that we're treated.
Yeah.
It's that seed is then planted.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's not a coincidence.
Yeah. And I am like not regretful over the experience that I had.
Yeah. You can't be.
Yeah. It taught me a lot.
Yeah.
And it brought some weird experiences and weird characters into my life, which I'm like actually really thankful for.
I guess part of what I'm trying to get at is that it's a very healthy, I think, to look back on those bad experiences or even like abusive interpersonal relationships and say like, you know, I learned a lot from that. But then I think sometimes people take it to a place of like, well, but then that's like tacitly accepting that like that's just the way that the world is and it's up to us to put a positive spin on it. And it's like we can say like I survived this and I learned this, but also still say like this should not stop happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know
like,
what I mean?
I don't want anybody else to have to go through that.
And I don't want to have to go through it again.
Absolutely.
Because it's going to keep fucking coming for you.
Yeah,
believe
totally.
Me. Yeah. Anyway, so you got your start, you worked in New York and Austin.
Yeah, I worked in New York. I was going to school in Austin at the time. And then I came back to New York and then continued working with like a collective for about 2 months before I was like, oh, this is actually not, I actually don't need like another person. Like if there's not another person here who also has a stake in my business, it's not like I'm going to die. So, or I'm going to flail in anyway. And so I went independent, and I have found such a amazing, like, I don't know, like having gone independent, it feels like there the vacuum that is left when you leave the structure of like a larger business or a larger house is that you find like a community that maybe, I know that I was definitely afraid of seeking out before because of like a, I guess like an undertone of like politics. But I found like this like ridiculous, beautiful community that has like supported me in so many different ways that does like a really great job of teaching me and informing me and like that I try to use as often as possible to hold me accountable both to like to things that are like moral and ethical and then also to like just good business practices and like things that can help me succeed in my own life.
Cool.
Yeah, I really love my friends. They're great. Oh my God, it's the best.
What would we do? What would we do without them?
Yeah, 100%.
So what do you do besides sit on your throne and survey your empire?
I daylight. Yeah. I work at an arts foundation as well. I do their social media and I also do a little bit of admin work. And then I also work in their archive.
That's hot.
I know. To people who don't know what I look like, I have like these big black librarian glasses on. And so like, that's definitely something that I think informs. Like, I definitely want to be like a hot librarian.
I think it's working for you.
Thank you. Like glasses to glasses. Thank you very much. Yeah. So I work in this archive. I'm also working on a master's right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm studying arts politics, which is the intersection of aesthetics and politics.
You ever heard of it?
Yeah. It's beautiful. I really love it. It's basically like cultural activism as like a degree, which I'm like, that's very cool that that can be a degree.
And speaking of cultural activism, you also work with Kink Out.
I do.
Will you describe what you were just saying to me about the when you put on your headphones for this recording, you were talking about being in the PS1 dome.
Oh, yeah.
And like loving the sound of your own voice.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in the MoMA PS1 dome recently, which is this dome that has been set up, I guess, by like VW or MoMA PS1's partnership with VW. It's just funny to me thinking about like, oh, yeah, this corporation is going to have like a partnership with this museum and institution. So the thing that we're going to do is we're going to put up a dome.
Thanks.
Yeah. Like I don't get architecture, but like,
and now you're going to fill that dome with filth.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just going to make it so dirty. But I went into the dome for like the first time and the acoustics of the dome was so interesting. I just could not stop talking for like the first like 5 minutes. Upon entry, because I just loved hearing the sound of my own voice. And that's how it feels right now when I'm wearing these lovely headphones. And
I am basically an art institution.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel so enveloped by it right now.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, you know, enveloped.
Yeah.
Great, sexy word.
Thank you.
And a great segue into what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, yes. I like almost forgot.
Yeah. How could you? How could you forget? I'm Tina Horn, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That? The podcast for queers, sluts, perverts, whores, and everyone who loves us. This January, the Pleasure Chest is highlighting all the ways you can expand your pleasure in 2020. They'll be sharing their sex specialist secrets to help you prioritize your pleasure in the new decade and beyond. They're also getting started on Valentine's Day early. You can save 20% on their most popular sex toys that are designed with couples in mind. That's January 14th through January 20th, online only at PleasureChest.com. While you're visiting PleasureChest.com, check out their curated couples kits, available right up until February 14th. But wait, there's more. From January 17th to February 11th, you can get a free WeVibe toy bag with all WeVibe toy purchases. Use code WEVIBEGWP online or visit a Pleasure Chest store in New York City, LA, or Chicago. Now, don't forget to follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram and Twitter for up-to-the-minute info on these deals and much more from this sex-positive community icon. All right, and now, on with the show.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Yeah, so one way that you might be enveloped by another person would be if they ate you.
We'll like just dive right into
for
that.
Dinner.
Yeah.
Which brings us to Wu's enthusiastic suggestion for today, which is, why are people into cannibalism?
Now, did I suggest this to you, or how did this conversation come up?
Oh my God, now you're putting me on the spot.
I don't remember. I was just like, oh yeah, I'm going to talk to Tina Horn about cannibalism. Like, that
I feel
was
like
just
it was
then.
Just always meant, this was, this has always, this conversation already exists.
Yeah.
It has already been made.
Yeah.
And we're just fulfilling our destiny.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't really believe in destiny, but I think I asked you if you wanted to do the pod, and you, I want to say it was your suggestion, because I don't think that I'm like going around saying like, will somebody please talk to me about about eating people?
Yeah, please.
I mean, maybe I kind of am.
Yeah, like,
but I
post that on Craigslist Misconnections, like.
Except you can't anymore because of FOSTA SESTA.
Oh, right.
But I guess we could post it on Instagram and see if it gets us shadow banned.
Yeah. Where's ISO cannibalism?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Exactly. C for C, cannibal for cannibal.
Yes.
I don't remember, but I do know that I am very excited to have this conversation. So what I would like us to start anytime the topic that we're discussing is one that gets into a realm of consensual non-consent, or like that requires a like clear differentiation between fantasy and reality,
mm-hmm.
and ethics. Can you talk a little bit about what the idea of the erotics of cannibalism means to you?
Yes. Well, I am very obsessed with consumption as like an idea, as mm-hmm. like an erotic idea, and that manifests in like multiple different ways. So I like the idea of eating. Like, I think that like there's something that's like really fetishistic to me about like ASMR mukbang videos.
What, mukbang?
Yeah, do you know what mukbang is?
I don't.
Okay, we're in a great place. So mukbang is this practice that started in Korea. It's like an internet phenomenon.
Okay.
Where people, primarily women, live stream themselves eating.
Okay.
Oh my God, has so many fascinating implications to it. They would live stream themselves eating, and a lot of the times, like, people would tune into their live stream so they wouldn't feel as lonely when they're eating themselves. Oh. I mean, not like eating themselves, but
right,
like,
when they
eating
themselves,
by themselves
are eating.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be very clear in this conversation. Yeah.
Absolutely. Which I think is really interesting because, number one, I read this recent article by Gia Tolentino.
I love Gia Tolentino.
Did you read that article that she wrote about like athletics, kale and bar? Yeah, she writes about like the phenomenon of Sweetgreen and like companies like Sweetgreen.
Right, right.
I mean, that's like part of the larger article, but she writes about how like that is like a symptom of like a larger system in which like a person basically has to like wolf down as much fuel as quickly as possible.
Right.
Like, so that they can continue to afford a lifestyle, so that they can work and then continue to afford a lifestyle in which like they can pay for things like $12 salads at Sweetgreen.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
It feels like distantly related to this idea of like, there has like been a created demand for somebody to eat on camera so that other people around the world can like feel not so isolated when they're in a system where they're like working super, super hard, when what they really are craving is like intimacy.
Oh my God. This is already
fascinating.
It's just, this is such a why are people into that conversation?
Yes.
I'm so excited.
It's so interesting.
That is so, you just wove together, like you're totally taking the like double meaning of consumption under capitalism, like, mm-hmm. very seriously. quoted Gia Tolentino. Mm-hmm. You're talking about like technology and alienation, mm-hmm. but also the ways that that technology can maybe create intimacy and like our discomfort that we have with the idea of like people being lonely but then needing this thing, but then like isn't it nice that we as humans are providing this thing to one another? But then also isn't it awful that society is creating the need for like fast, like $12 fast food salads?
Which is weird, right? And I think that the thing about that Gia Tolentino article is that it's about the idea of an ideal woman.
Right.
Which is like, if you're thinking about a woman who's live streaming herself eating, that's like such a, it's like simultaneously very cyborgian and then also very human, right? You're doing like a very fundamental human function.
Right.
But you're doing it over and across like these like, I don't know, like cybernetic pathways.
Yes.
And so it's like a, but like the person who would get the most out of their live stream, out of their live stream, I don't know, their live streaming practice, let's say. Is like an ideal woman, right? And then there are also fetishes that like, that start to like crop up out of this just like fundamental experience of like wanting to assuage like your own loneliness, right?
There's so much there.
Yeah.
Because like, first of all, yes, live streaming yourself eating is mundane to almost the point of like inviting the critique of like voyeurism, like people's discomfort with voyeurism, people's discomfort with like something that is so the entertainment value of banality.
Yeah.
But then also eating, like voyeuring to someone eating is actually to me sort of accentuates the things that are essentially disgusting about eating.
Yeah.
Like masticating and
yes,
and like the, I mean, people are repulsed by people eating in public. Mm-hmm. Like I am not, and I'm always shocked when people are like, I
fucking love that shit
I've heard that about you actually. That you're like, can you
who's told you?
People have told me that you're like, can you eat that brisket a little closer to the computer?
That's great.
But yeah, you know, the idea of like watching an ideal woman eat is really interesting, because I feel like eating is one of those things that if we're thinking about like idealized femininity, especially like white supremacist bourgeois politeness, we're going to be thinking about someone who like, first of all, doesn't eat too much and does not have like an appetite or is not like a like gluttonous.
Yeah.
And who eats in a very like control, like self-controlled.
She just drinks Soylent all day.
Oh my God.
She just mainline Soylent.
Or like sips it.
Yeah.
Sips it through a straw.
Absolutely.
Right?
She's wearing gloves.
If what you want to talk about is eating fetishism, or like both in the sense of like being an exhibitionist who likes people watching them eat, being a voyeur who likes to watch people eat, incorporating food into sex or play, like all of that is like very, very interesting, and I think obviously connected to cannibalism, but like cannibalism is like a giant flashing neon sign of like a deeper transgression than just your ordinary meal.
It's all related on this like journey that I have, this like little very narrow rabbit hole that I have like dove into that has consumed me, where I am obsessed with ASMR mukbang videos.
Okay.
I just like love the sound of people eating.
Okay.
I love the sight of people eating.
Yes.
I think that is very fascinating. And also it makes me very hungry. But when I was first starting off in fetish, there were two things that happened for me that I think were kind of formative.
And is this professional fetishism?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
The first was I saw this client. We'll call him Mental Dental.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that he is a client that other people have seen.
Yeah.
Because I've talked to other people and they said that they have seen him. His specific fetish is that he wants like his teeth pulled.
Wow.
Yeah. He was the first client that I had ever seen.
Whoa.
Yeah. The person who goes
straight to Marathon Man.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie Marathon Man?
No.
It has some great torture porn in it.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Laurence Olivier dental torture. That's,
yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, my boss was essentially like, or my manager, or whatever it is, essentially popped into the room, said like, oh, by the way, this person is coming in. Don't pull out any of his teeth. And I'm like, okay, wasn't planning on doing that. Don't know what you're talking about. And then I get into the room with him. And he and I talk about the experience, or he and I talk about what it is that he's interested in. And he tells me about like stories from like a long time ago. And like, cause this man is an older man. He tells me stories about like experiences that he has had that he really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I start to realize that he wants me to pull out his teeth.
Does he want you to pull out his teeth, or does he want you to engage with the fantasy that you're going to pull his teeth out?
He doesn't make that clear.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that he actually does want me to pull out his teeth. I don't think that it is... I think that he actually does want me to pull out his teeth, mostly because, like, when we start getting into the session, he opens his mouth and not all of his teeth are there.
Well, that's a dead giveaway.
If that's not a fucking tell, I don't know what is. So I start to, like, pinch his teeth. And, like, you can't, like, pull out his teeth because, obviously, he can only come back so many times. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
right. I would imagine that, okay, that somebody with an extreme, a fetish that involves, let's, instead of placing the value judgment of extreme, let's say someone who has a fetish that if it was actually going to be realized would cause irreparable harm or change to their body, like whether you would call like pulling out someone's teeth a mutilation or
I guess
not.
Like a permanent there's like a sense of permanence to it.
It's permanent. Yeah, I mean,
those
you
are
can
your permanent
get
teeth.
Yeah, you can get like, you know, various kinds of
dentures.
Yeah, exactly. But like ultimately, veneers. Like once that tooth is gone, there's not, you're not growing another tooth.
Yeah, you can't have that experience again
of that particular tooth being pulled out again, right? So you probably build into your fetish the understanding that there are going to be a lot of people who are unwilling to cross that line. Mm-hmm. So you probably enjoy like shocking people and then, like talking about it and building it up and like building the anticipation of like, is this going to be somebody who is actually going to like
go through
cross
with
this
it.
Line with me? Exactly. Go through with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this person I saw a couple of times where I found him very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm forever grateful for that experience. And then around the same time, I was still lurking around Craigslist.
Wait, did you cross the line?
I didn't.
Okay, you never did.
There's a part of me that kind of wishes that I had, I will say, because I just like would like to have that. I would just want one.
Mental dental, if you can hear the sound of my voice.
Come towards the
Wu and I would like to go full Laurence Olivier on you. So just, you know, you'd Google us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I miss you.
Okay, so you were on Craigslist.
Yeah, I was on Craigslist. And around the same time, I found somebody who had posted like a talent gig.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned, he was just like, I want to watch you eat.
Great.
And so I knew what vor was by that time.
Right.
I wrote him back. He was like, I was like, okay. He said that he wanted to pay for videos of me eating.
Right.
I was like, is this a sexual thing? Like, do you have a vor fetish? And he was like, no, it's not a sexual thing. Also, what is vor? And then I was like, yeah, okay, not a sexual thing. And then I told him about the fact that I was like starting off professionally in fetish.
Can you define vor, please?
Right. So vor, short for carnivore.
Sure.
Is the fetish that is related to people eating other people.
Right.
Yeah. It can take place in many different forms. Sometimes that's like your very run-of-the-mill, like cannibalism, slicing people up, putting them in your mouth. And sometimes it is related to like a giantess fetish, right? So
you
being like the size of a pea and like me swallowing you whole, which is what this person was into.
Interesting.
He mentioned in his ad that he wanted to watch all the, I guess, like, systems or the mechanics of somebody swallowing. I would make videos for him where I would take my smartphone and, like, when I had prepared a meal, I would take my smartphone, put it up to my mouth, and, like, chew with my mouth open and try my best to, like, swallow with my mouth open.
Great.
So it was, like, a mukbang video.
Right.
But very specific. And then as we continued to talk about like my entry into professional kink, he started saying things like, okay, can you integrate the storyline into your videos?
Great.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
And I was like, I love a story.
Yeah, I know, right? That's like, that's most of the reason that I watch porn nowadays is for the story.
Yeah, porn has some great archetypical stories.
They do have some great archetypical stories.
They really
stories.
Get a bad rap.
I also would love to just do like a study of like, oh, different porn tropes and just like, just have like a nice categorization of them. But anyway.
I think you should. And I think you could do that with your degree. I think that's cultural.
Activism.
Cultural activism. Yeah.
It's like archiving too. Yeah.
It's definitely archiving.
Yeah.
Archiving human desire.
Oh my God. If I could be a porn archivist. Oh my goodness.
It's stranger things have happened.
That's true. I feel like that is actually a really good job for me.
I agree. You know, I just want to interject again and say that's something that's so interesting to me about like what's emerging from the stories that you've told already is the idea of vor being people like having fantasies of eating other human beings. Like, mm-hmm. to be clear, like why are people into cannibalism? Why are people into vor? Like, people having fantasies of consuming, of humans having fantasies of consuming human flesh.
Right.
And possibly because that is an ethical transgression, mm-hmm. Beyond even pulling out someone's teeth, that is extremely unlikely to occur in one's lifetime, almost to the point that it's like supernatural.
Yeah.
That it's like a supernatural desire. Like, I want to get fucked by a unicorn. Like, yeah. You know.
Same.
Almost as likely.
Yeah.
But so that people develop like a fascination with just like the mechanics of eating or the like mm-hmm. fetishism of eating.
Yeah.
But it's not just, I mean, I'm sure that there are people who also have, I know that there are people who have a fetish just for eating that doesn't have anything to do with cannibalism.
Right.
And we've talked about splashing on this show, and we've talked about like food crushing and like wet and messy, like mm-hmm. earlier or last year with Lindsay Dye, and I've talked about splashing with Lorelai Lee.
Big fan of those episodes.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're great people.
Great people. I'm very lucky. Yeah. But this is a different kind of food fetishism.
Yeah.
That is distinctly related to cannibalism, which we're going to go into in more depth. But anyway, so go on.
Right.
So you had this guy who you start to incorporate the stories into the videos.
Right. So the stories, the storylines that he would want me to talk about and incorporate into these videos is that like, while my mouth is open, I talk about like him like getting lost amongst my teeth. Aww. And like sliding down my throat and like not being able to escape no matter how many times like, no matter how hard he tries to escape my mouth.
Yeah.
And so the thing that I think is like really intimate, like I think that cannibalism is very intimate.
It is definitely intimate.
Yeah. And like part of that intimacy is like there is a feeling of uniqueness that comes with cannibalism, right? Like I can only give myself, like I only have so much meat to cut off my body.
True.
Right. You know, there are moments in sex where you're, like, fucking someone, right?
Yeah.
Even you're fucking somebody and you're, like, so close to this person.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I don't want to leave this place.
Right.
Right. And so there's, like, a sense of, number one, the idea of, like, oh, I don't want to leave here. And number two, like, oh, our skin can only be so...
Yeah.
Our skin can only touch each other so much, right?
Yeah, so let's break it.
Yeah. Let's break it. You sound like we sound like teenagers right now. We're like, yes, I have so much rage. I don't know what to do with. Let's break it.
Yeah. Well, right. So, like, you want to be so close to someone that you want to cross that barrier of your sack of flesh sack.
Yeah.
But also that if someone could consume you and digest you,
right,
that you would become a part of one another.
Yeah,
your exactly. bodies would
be intertwined in a way that is you cannot
do with sex.
Disentangle.
Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah. Yeah. That, exactly. It, like sex makes you want to do that in a way that that you couldn't you don't want to leave that place.
Right.
Oh, it's so poetic and sweet.
Isn't that so sweet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like a really like sweet, intimate fetish. There is like a, I mean, yeah, there's a bit of, there's, it gets like a bad violent rep.
So cannibalism, such a bad rep. Being violent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to be clear, there's a fantasy of cannibalism, just like any other fantasy. You can tell a story, and it might be a story of like being trapped in someone's mouth, or it might be a explicit story of being going through their whole digestive system, or it might be a story of how you are going to like cook and prepare the other person, or it might be like what are you going to taste like what is it going to be like when I'm chewing on you, what is it going to be like when I'm so, you know, so it might, so, and of you know, just like anything else, this fetish is going to go both ways, where like somebody with a cannibal fetish might be interested in doing the eating, and somebody might be interested in being eaten, and all of the like using your sort of like horror imagination to like invoke what that experience would be like, ultimately an experience that you don't truly want to have. It's very rare that somebody actually really wants to make that a reality.
Yeah.
And we can maybe talk about, game out the ethics of it being possible to make this fetish
and
real.
And also like kind of the impossibility of it, right?
Right.
Like there's not a lot. I mean, it's definitely possible for it to happen, but there's just like not a lot of probability of it happening, and there's not a lot of probability of it happening and then being able to like debrief with the person afterwards of being like, how was that for you? It was like smoking a cigarette together in bed.
You're like in
pillow talk.
They're like in your belly.
Yeah.
Like, how was that for you?
Yeah. Did you come?
Did you come? Well, if you didn't, that was your chance. But then, okay, so there's the fantasy and some of the ways that you can like, you know, verbalize it or do like a role play, you know, where you're like acting it out, and we can talk about that more.
Yeah.
And then there's like the rare circumstances under which it would be ethically possible to consume human flesh in an erotic context. But then there's like the accentuating of the elements of sex that are about consuming one another. So here are some examples. When we talk about oral sex, we talk about eating somebody out.
Yeah.
Right?
Very true.
When we consume each other's fluids.
Yep.
Technically cannibalism.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing, is that like, okay, there are a couple of, there are like three thoughts that are happening inside of my brain right now.
Sure.
The first is that I was thinking for a long time about like the way in which we talk about sex, like it has like a very, it kind of like implies like a certain dynamic between like the actor and the person being acted upon.
Totally.
Just like even like, okay, topping and bottoming, right?
Right.
Or like I'm penetrating somebody. And that's like, that is the default way that we talk about like going into another hole.
Even like the like transitive verb to fuck, right?
Yeah.
That like if you, if like, if I say I fucked him.
Yeah.
Like I think that most people are thinking that like I like penetrated his hole.
Absolutely. I think that that language and the way that that language is utilized kind of has like an implication that like the person who has digits is the one invading the space of a person.
Oh, I love the idea of invading somebody's space.
Yeah. But and there's like a, right, like you said, like it is an active position. Like even if that person is being ridden, they're still penetrating somebody else.
Right. And that the idea that if you're being penetrated, that you are passive, that you're somebody who's receiving. Being acted upon. Yeah. Yeah.
But what I think is interesting about the idea of like consumption is that like that positions the person who has like the holes that are being entered as like the one who is the active party.
Oh my God, that's so true.
So they are because, like consuming.
Because there is an implication, just I guess like a very animalistic implication of like consuming someone else as dominating them.
Yeah.
That if you are eating someone else, that you are higher up on the food chain, or you have bested them in the fight to the death of,
yeah,
like that you're the hunter,
yeah,
that one of you, my that or the predator that has like caught their prey and yeah. is now, you know, enjoying the spoils of absolutely. The hunt.
And it's also funny, like one of my
but you're receiving them into your holes in your body. I love your mind.
Thank you. It's hard because I'm like trying to like articulate what's happening without using the language that like people have like traditionally used.
Yeah.
One of my first boyfriends when I was in high school, I would say, "Oh, I like it when you give me head."
Yeah.
And he hated that. Hmm. He was like, "That's not how that's called." I'm like, it doesn't matter how it's called. I just like it when you do
just
it.
Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also, it's like, it's just funny to me that like, that was like, oh, I don't want to, like, I'm giving you head. That's gay. You know what I mean? Like, that's just like a ridiculous.
Yeah, apparently so.
Yeah. Eating pussy is so fucking gay. Well, actually, it can be.
It sure can.
Yeah. It wasn't in that context, but it's just funny to me how those things are gendered, right? So like the idea of like, oh, giving head versus like eating pussy.
Well, it's interesting too when you think about like, it's like an insult to say like eat a bag of dicks.
Yeah.
But we rarely erotically say I'm gonna eat your dick.
Yeah.
I mean, I might say that
so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, but I might say like, I'm going to eat your pussy.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why? Now I'm like very conscious of my ASMR mouth sounds in this podcast.
Yep.
just thinking about like oral sex and sex that uses the mouth.
Yeah. Fluid exchange.
Fluid exchange for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, eating. I mean, listen, there's like eating cum. It's also interesting to think about the ways that like swallowing mm-hmm. is considered like a submissive thing to do.
Yeah.
If you swallow someone.
Yeah.
But then as we were talking about the sort of fundamental dynamics of the like fantasy of cannibalism mm-hmm. sort of posits the eater.
Yeah.
As the dominant.
Okay. So second point.
Okay.
I did a panel recently at yeah. Pass the Porn. Thank you very much, Lila Jean. And the panel was on like the vomiting fetish.
Oh yeah.
Emetophilia. And so something I was there.
Roman showers.
Yes.
We called them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the day.
Back in Roman times.
Yes,
back then. That's they just when called I got them my showers.
Start, yeah. You know, they had Craigslist back then. Yeah, they just called them, in Rome, they just called them showers.
Yeah, when yeah. in Rome, you just call it a shower.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
So I was on this panel and I was on with Lainey and Zachary Zane, and who was a writer who has a vomiting fetish.
Interesting.
And so he and I and Lainey were all talking about like vomiting as like a, it's like food splashing and vomiting, like as like a idea and a fetish. And so something that I asked him was, number one, do you like being the...
Do you like vomiting or do you like someone vomiting on you?
Exactly. And then number two, do you consider swallowing as being like vom top or vom bottom, right? Or
like speaking of consumption,
right?
Like one way in the house that I worked at that we would designate between people who wanted a brown shower where they just wanted someone to take a shit on their body or in their proximity, they wanted to watch someone versus full consumption, which was that they wanted it in their mouth.
Yeah.
Right. So my question would be like, yeah, if someone was like, I want to hire you to do a Roman shower scene.
Yeah.
These would be some of my questions. Do you want me to puke in your mouth? I love the part of the podcast where we start getting into the like nitty gritty and I can like hear the people mechanics. Like stop, just like cannot listen to this anymore. Shout out to the people who are still listening.
Yeah.
So like, do you want me to puke in your mouth? Mm-hmm. Do you want me to puke on your dick?
Right.
Do you just want to watch me puke? Like, do you, you know, what do you want to just like, do you want to play with it? Like, you know, what's
puke in the butt?
Like, do you want, I mean, you know what? Butt? You read my mind. Yeah. It's like, do we need to like get make you out. Gape and then puke it in your ass? I don't know if I
have never done that, but that is now on a bucket list for me.
I don't know if I would feel comfortable
puking in a butt.
I mean, I could like stomach it, if you will, but I feel like I would want to talk to a doctor about like what effect that matter, the matter of vomit would have in the like ecosystem of someone's rectum. Like,
I was talking to somebody, a doctor.
Doctors, get at me with like what would happen with. I'm going to talk to Dr. Joe Osmondson because he's my like, what if I put this episode in a butt?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to ask you him about puke. You text
him at like 3 a.m. Be like, puke and butt? Question mark? Okay? Question mark? Need to know now.
I mean, I could text him right now, but he for sure would. He would know. Yeah.
Well, so. I was talking to somebody recently about like piss enemas.
Right.
Which I feel like carries like a similar set of questions.
Yeah.
And so
I guess I'm just worried. I said vile when I meant bile, but bile is vile. So it's another V word. Yeah. Vile is kind of
Empress
great.
Vile. That's Empress a great vile, name.
Short for Violet.
Oh my God.
That is good.
Yeah.
Villanelle.
Yes.
Speaking of sexy murder.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But anyway, okay. I feel like bile is like corrosive.
Yeah.
But I'm not a doctor.
But how corrosive? I mean, like,
too corrosive for the rectum is the question.
Yeah, that's, yeah, exactly. Like, I imagine it's probably not a good idea to stay there, but as like an enema, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, also it's interesting because bile is created in the digestive system.
Yeah.
So
this feels like we're trying to like figure this out now and neither of us are scientists.
And also not like particularly like interested. And I'm not trying to get like puke in my ass.
Yeah.
But it's fun to think about. It's I'm interested in the limits of the abject.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Absolutely.
Are you?
Next
question. I'm getting that vibe and I'm loving the vibe. Okay, so you guys were on the panel and you were talking about puking.
Yes. So his puke fetish.
Yeah.
It specifically has to do with like he enjoys it, and I think that this is very common. He enjoys vomiting, like being forced to vomit by sucking dick and like having that trigger that gag reflex.
So see, that's the other thing about this is that I feel like there's a difference between I've totally puked while giving head.
Yeah. Have you ever really given head if you haven't puked?
The answer to that question is I don't think so. But, I'm with you. With you. I have definitely found it to be erotic both to feel like I like pushed myself that far or like allowed myself to be.
I am an athlete.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm thinking of one time in particular where like just like spitting up like literally like to the side and then like getting back to work made me feel really powerful.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
I feel like there's a difference between that level of puking and like full on
Roman showering.
That's right.
I agree. But the thing that I think is interesting about that conversation is that the person who is puking can inhabit both roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the same, like both like dom and sub, and I think that the same is possible for cannibalism.
Okay.
Especially like played out in fantasy, right?
Well, if you force someone to eat someone,
yeah,
then you're forcing them to transgress a very serious taboo.
Yeah.
So you could dominate someone by making them eat someone else. You could dominate them by making them eat you and being mm-hmm. like, you are now changed forever.
Yeah.
Because you have eaten human flesh.
Yeah, absolutely. There's like that one scene. There's this one scene in Family Guy where like, where
it's too abject.
Meg has like a crush on Brian. And so she like serves him a slice of pie, but it has her hair in it. And that is
isn't Brian the dog?
Yeah.
Okay.
The characters don't matter. It's just fair. The context. And part of that feels like a forced, like, you can't get rid of me type of situation. Like,
right.
Dominance. And like, for me, like a lot of the way that my cannibalism has found terrestrialization, I guess, is like, is through piss. Like, I love making people drink my pee.
Right.
And like,
right, this goes back to the fluids. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think that that is like it's a very kinky thing, and it's a very queer thing, right?
Totally. But it's also like quite, I would say, isn't it so funny that you're drawing this comparison? Because like, golden showers are, I think, probably like, if you like asked a person on the street to name five fetishes,
mm-hmm.
it would probably be on it. In some ways, it's like a bit of a like gateway kink, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, I'm like, want to spice things up, or like explore, you know, I'm like seeing a mistress for the first time, like, what should I do? Oh, maybe I'll do a golden shower.
Yeah.
Partially because piss is sterile. Yeah. And so it's like, it's kind of getting into a like, is this a fluid that I'm allowed to eroticize, but it's not as extreme or mm-hmm. like messing with potential health issues as it's a brown shower or a Roman shower. Safe.
Yeah. It's not like an edge play
totally
situation.
For most people.
Yeah.
But as you're pointing out, there is an element of consuming human matter.
Yeah.
Like something that was like a part of your body that mm-hmm. is now becoming waste, like mm-hmm. as it's
that
leaving
I
your
made
body.
For you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Yeah. And like.
Yeah. And then there's the idea of like goddess worship and, or, you know, of worshiping the person who is pissing on you or pissing in your mouth, where it's like even your waste is
totally
sacred
and
sexy and beautiful to me, and like transforming something that we think of as waste that should go in the toilet and transforming it into something like hot and erotic and beautiful and intimate.
Yeah, very intimate. I think that, I don't know, for me, it is never, piss play has never landed as something that like, and I think that this is like this for certain people, piss play has never landed for me as something like, oh, I'm pissing on you because you're fucking useless.
Mm-hmm.
It is always,
you're my toilet.
Yeah.
You're this my is the only
dumb.
Thing that you're good for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Piss play has always been like, this is a privilege. Like, you get to take home a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
You are so lucky. And like,
I relate to that.
Yeah. And I think I really like that about piss. And I think that that is like,
oh, you get to take, it's like a souvenir.
Yeah.
It's that like, is like then now like a part of your body.
Yeah, you're welcome. Like, it's like, and also I like the idea of just like, can you imagine if everybody in the world had like a piss top and a piss bottom, and then everybody was just like recycling the same. It's like that story of like they fold the Tootsie leftovers from the Tootsie Roll back in. So like part of the original recipe always main is, do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Well, with like the Tootsie Roll factory, like they always take the Tootsie Roll from the day before and they fold it into the next day's batch.
Whoa.
So that there's a tiny part of the original formula that remains in every batch.
I have never heard that.
Well, that's what came to mind just now. But if everybody had like a piss top and a piss bottom, it's just like they were all just like folding each other's piss back into each other. You know, it's
I'm
like
just really glad chain. You said that instead of human centipede.
Yeah.
while we're going there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.